have a collect call from an inmate at the Washington Correctional Center. To accept the call, press 5.
There's nothing like waking up to the sound of clacking and buzzing as the doors crack in the morning after count clears. Waking up to the reality of life in prison. For some, it is just a stop along their journey, a milepost, an experience. For others, it is a revolving door, in and out, and that's their way of life, stuck in the cycle, pulling and eating away at them. And then for some, it becomes their destination, as the hammer came down and that judge issued them a death sentence. The slow way, by way of life in prison. This is The Life of a Lifer by Taylor Conway.
Keep on walking down the line. Keep on walking down the line. Keep on walking down that street. Keep on walking down the line.
All right, I got Brian Bruton with me, and I just want to say that after getting to know this guy a little bit, talking to him for a minute, I got to say he's got a very interesting story. So, Brian, are you on the line there?
I'm here, Richard Taylor. What's up, bro? How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. It's good to hear you. How you been?
Yeah, absolutely. Man, I am living life, loving it. You know, I'm free. I feel your pain, bro. I know where you're at, and I know what you're going through because I've been there. And, you know, I like to tell people frequently, like, no matter where you're at, no matter what you're going through, there is a bright side of it. And, you know, just watching your story a little bit shows exactly what I say to people is, no matter how dark a situation is, you can make light of it. You can bring some light to a dark situation, and you're doing that by sharing your story in the way that you do, man. You're reaching people, I imagine, around the world. So you're a shining example of, dude, as bad as things can be, you can still find a way to be positive in it. So much props to you for that one.
Thanks, man. You know, a motto that I live by is turning a negative into a positive, and it don't really matter. At the end of the day, you can live your life dwelling on what happened and keep perpetuating that, you know, place that you live in of negativity, or you can flip it around and turn it into something and move on with life and try to make the best of what you got and keep moving forward. You know, I'm still fighting for my freedom every day, trying to really shed light into what really took place and have some justice served. But at the same time, I'm not making excuses because I lived the life that led me to this place that I'm at, but I'm doing something about it. I'm not just sitting around playing into that negativity and continuing to perpetuate the cycle. And I see that after, well, you've been out for about, how long you been out for now? About five, six years, something like that?
July 29th of this year will make 6 years.
Wow, man. And so you came from such a dark place that you were at. You said that you did your time in Florida?
I did. 11 years I did in Florida.
11 years, man. So that's over a decade away from society. And you got out and you had a plan in mind, man. You had a plan to really do something with yourself. And so why don't you tell us a little bit about how you came from this struggle to getting out and you beat the odds, because so many people fall right back into the same cycle that led them there. And I don't really know, like, too much about your story of, like, where you came from, how you grew up, and things like that, or even if you were there rightfully so, but I do know that you overcame the odds, because so many fall right back into it.
Taylor, that's amazing that you mentioned that, man, because that's what I tell people all the time, that honestly, statistically, right, if you just look at the odds, I'm not even supposed to be here. because people do fall right back into that same thing. And so while I was locked up, I had a 10-year sentence originally. In Florida, you do 85% of that. So I'm just going to take it back a little bit to explain how I've been able to beat the odds. If you take it, I'm sorry, when you get a 10-year bid in Florida, you got to do 85%, which gives you 8.5 years. During that time, while I was locked up, I caught another charge. They took all of my game time from me, and then they added on 1.5 years, which ultimately, in the end, I ended up doing 11 years total. But 2.5 of those years, they locked me into solitary confinement. You know what solitary confinement is. I'm locked in a room by myself 24 hours a day. Now, there's two things right there that happens. It either makes you or it breaks you. It's like there is no in between. And I was seeing, well, primarily at the beginning, just hearing, because my first cell that I was in, you couldn't see anybody. You couldn't see daylight. You couldn't see nighttime. I was just in a room with artificial light. There was no access to see outside, but I could hear the guys around me that were just snapping, that were going nuts, that it was breaking their spirit. And I knew immediately, look, there's nobody else here. It's just me. It's all up to me. And I have a choice to make right now. I could turn this negative into a positive. I can overcome this. I can beat this. And I remember saying to myself, you know what? You guys got me. You put me in a cage physically, but you'll never lock me up mentally. And I refused to be locked up mentally. And I just, that was the biggest pivotal point in my life that I knew. And from that point on, that I had to make some changes, that I had to work on my thinking, that I had to work on my belief system that I operate on. And as I started to read and study and reflect upon my past and just start to implement this new way of thinking, I began to feel my life change, and I began to understand that I'm where I'm at because of my decisions, but I can also go wherever I want to go in life also by my decisions. And I knew the day that I get out, you know, it's not going to be easy. No, but nobody is ever going to be standing there and like with a silver platter saying, hey, here it is, man. Here you go. Here's everything that you ever want on a platter. And especially for somebody like you or I that have walked this walk and have worn these shoes, there's a lot of people that are going to turn away from you out here. There's a lot of people that are going to be like, I don't want to be around this person because they've been down this road. You know, people don't take the time to get to know you a lot of times. They just know your past. So they're like, I don't want to be involved with this, right? So the odds are greater for us that we're not going to succeed in life. However, that doesn't mean that it's impossible. What it means is that when other people are resting, when other people are giving in, when other people are taking it easy, you got to keep working. You got to keep grinding. You got to keep believing. You got to keep pushing. And that's what I knew, and that's what I started to learn and understand. And as I began to implement that, it changed my life tremendously. And so I practiced that while I was in Florida, they call it CM, which is controlled management, which is where you're locked down. But the camp that I was at, the prison I was at, was single man cells for the entire institution. And once I was released from there after 2.5 years, I was just a completely different person. I was able to navigate the system in a different way that hardly any outside influences had the potential to even bother me at all. And as you know, prison is a negative environment, right? It's a predatory environment. It's a difficult environment. But once I started learning all this, it just made it to where I was breezing through the system. Not to say I was having fun, because I never had fun, not one day in prison. But I was able to navigate it in a different way. And so that transcended into my life on the streets. When I came home, I moved. As soon as I got out of prison, I got released in Florida. I spent 2 weeks visiting family. From there, my little brother bought me an airline ticket to San Diego. I moved up toward the Bay Area in California, up near Stockton, and I actually lived there with him for a little while. But financially, it was difficult. You know, he really didn't have much going on. We lived far away from everything. It was like way out on a farm in a little shack, like really a cottage type thing. it was difficult to find work. I remember one of the first places I tried to get a job was Amazon, which is an enormous company. And I just tried to get a warehouse job that I knew if they hire me, I'm going to be the best warehouse worker in there because my work ethic, I'm just going to surpass 9 out of 10 people around me. Amazon turned me down. I just kept getting turned down and turned down and turned down for every job because of my record. And, you know, Taylor, my record is just ridiculously long. When you look at it, it's just like 10 pages long. For somebody to look at that on paper, especially an employer, like, to be honest with you, me as a company owner, if I didn't know what I know or haven't been what I've been through and somebody came in with my record and was asking for a job, I'd be like, no thanks, man. Let me go on and show you where the exit is. And so that's how a lot of people view it, right? They don't take the time to get to know you. But I knew I can't give up on myself. If I give up on myself, the world will give up on me. And so I just knew I got to keep pushing. I got to keep talking. And what I was doing was telling people, everybody, every chance that I had that I come in contact with people, I would tell them, hey, I'm looking for work. Hey, I'm eager to work. Do you have yard work that I can do? And I actually started out just doing odds and ends, just yard work for people, cleaning up shit around their yard, cleaning up around their house. And doing that, I began to meet other people. And then my first big break job-wise was doing that type of work. I met a guy that was an electrical contractor. And one day he asked me if I knew anybody that wanted a job. And I knew he was an electrical contractor. And I was just like, nah, I don't know anybody that's an electrician. He was like, they don't have to be. And he was really asking me if I wanted a job, but he didn't just come right out and say it. And even then I was just like, I don't really know anybody because, you know, I don't know anything about electrical, not in the sense that I could go work for an electrical contractor. And he was like, well, it pays really well. And I was like, oh, yeah? Well, how much does it pay? He was like, $45 an hour. And I was like, yeah. Well, tell me a little bit about it. So he tells me a little bit about the job. And I'm like, oh, man, you know what? I might be interested in that. Well, what he wasn't telling me at the beginning was this was a government contract job. And they have in California what's called a prevailing wage. And those government jobs, the government sets the wages for all the employees. And the contractor is supposed to pay them that amount. Well, this guy was paying me I took the job, by the way. And it wasn't doing actual electrical. It was doing the install of, like, the piping that goes in prior to the wiring. And then once you get the piping in, you pull the electrical wire through that. But it was a big building on a military base. Totally blown away that these people even cleared me to go on a military base. But they did. I got the job, working hard on the job. Come to find out, the guy was keeping part of my money. I was supposed to be getting paid $75 per hour, and I didn't even know it.
Wow.
And then it was crazy, man. And as the job went on, I ended up finding out about it. In fact, all of us that were working for him found out. And what ultimately happened was after we worked there for a while, we all found out he had to pay everybody all that back pay every week that he was keeping. Like mine was $30 per hour on top of the 45. He ended up having to pay that all to all of us. So it was kind of like a nice little windfall at the end. But
yeah,
that was my first big break, man. Yeah. And it all came from believing in myself, not caring about people telling me no, and just staying hungry every single day. Prior to this job, as I was struggling, there was a time where I couldn't even afford to feed myself. And I'm just not the type of person that's going to go asking for a handout. So you remember I told you I was living on this in this like cottage on a farm with my brother. I was literally for a week straight picking these apples off of a tree. I would take like a little grocery bag out there and get apples and put them in a bag. And I was eating apples and drinking water. Bro, that's nice. It keeps you from going hungry. But when you eat nothing but apples for a week and just drink water, hey, it is brutal on your stomach, man. It is difficult. The apples were good, but it's just not good to feed yourself apples for an entire week.
No.
It is not.
No, man.
No, it isn't. So my point in that is that I've known the struggle inside. I've known the struggle outside. But ultimately, Taylor, my message to everybody is that regardless of the struggle, life is what you perceive it as. If you're in a struggle and you're saying to yourself, oh, this is all bad, it's all bad, that's exactly what it's going to be. But if you're in the struggle and you're telling yourself, you know what, it doesn't matter, I'm going to keep fighting, I'm bigger than this, I'm better than this, I'm going to overcome this, then that is what you create. That is what you can become. And it's all about the mindset that we as individuals, that we use in our daily life, man. That's how I've been able to overcome everything that I've overcome in life is my mindset.
That's crazy that you say that, man, because I wrote a book called The Convicted Entrepreneur, which kind of lays out exactly what I've done with all this stuff with Design Conviction, man. And the subtitle to that is Change the State of Mind. So I completely agree with what you said, man. It's all a mind state. When I decided I wanted to quit using drugs and get over that part of my life, I just decided that, man. I made up my mind that I wasn't going to keep doing the same shit that took me to prison to begin with and fucking had me in this place that I was a slave, not only to the state, but to the own things that I was doing to my own body and my own mind, man. So I just decided, I said, look, I'm not going to do this shit no more. And boom, I didn't do it no more because that was the mind state that you had. And then you decide that you're going to do something with your life regardless of the odds or regardless of the situation, and you do it. You just make shit happen. You know what I mean? You manifest your destiny. You don't sit there and wait for it to happen for you. Like, you went out there and you went and knocked on doors and asked them if they needed some yard work done, and pretty soon a door opened up that led you to the next opportunity that had you making $75 an hour, even though the guy was trying to get you for 30 of them. But,
yeah, no doubt. Taylor, that is precisely what it is. And I've learned that. It's like I've always been an overly optimistic person. However, when I was locked in solitary confinement, my neighbor was on death row. He was literally waiting to be put to death. I've never seen the guy, seen him, because we were separated by a wall, but we could talk through the vent. And he told me one day, he was one of the most well-spoken, really well-read people. He was very knowledgeable. And he tells me, he's like, hey, Bruce, shoot your line. You know, the fishing line, right? So I shoot my line out from under the door. He shoots his line. He's like, pull your line back. I pull it back, and on there is attached a program called Siddha Yoga, and it's spelled S-I-D-D-H-A. It's not like yoga where you're sitting in the room doing yoga poses. It's all about your mindset, and that course is what introduced me to changing my mindset. And it is exactly that. It's decisions, bro. No matter what you're doing in life, if you want better, you have to decide that, and then you got to hold yourself accountable to it once you make that decision, and you got to stick by it. You got to keep pushing. You got to keep moving, and don't sit around waiting. We cannot sit around just waiting on other people to make things happen. It's up to us as individuals to make something happen out of this life, man. Because as you well know, Taylor, we have this one life that we know of, and it's very short, man. It is not for us to sit here and waste in any type of way. I mean, you're doing just a little bit that I've seen about you. You're creating a positivity in this world bigger than a lot of people out here in the free world will ever create, man. And that speaks volumes that you're able to do that. But the reason you're able to do that is because you made a decision to do this, and you're not giving up on it. And that's amazing, bro.
Absolutely, man. I appreciate that. I really do. And I feed off of people like you that are out there living proof of the concepts that we're talking about here on Life of a Lifer and through the magazines that we do with Design Conviction and the stuff that we spread. We shoot these magazines out across the country to prisons, and we're sending these messages to people like, look, man, you can do something with your life. Don't just sit in prison and waste your time feeding in on the negativity. Do something with yourself and make something and start now. It doesn't have to start when you get out, or if you never get out, why not start doing something with yourself? You don't have to give up on your life, you know? And I think that we're really getting some responses from people by doing that. People are really, like, getting hope and getting a difference. Like, they're seeing things because of what we're doing here. And so I really feel like it's going to make a big difference, man. The more momentum that we get, the more people that believe in that concept, I think that it's a great thing, man. And the message that you're spreading and the living proof that you are walking, just like Seth Anthony. Seth Anthony is a great example as well. And I see a lot of similarities between the two of you in that you've done a bunch of time in prison, you've overcome these obstacles, and you set your mind to doing these great things, and man, you're accomplishing them. We got Seth coming out to Longview, Washington. He's going to be at the Columbia Theater, and he's going to put on a show, the Free Taylor Show, and we're going to be talking about a lot of these concepts there and really kind of being able to get out and show what Design Conviction is all about, man. I really appreciate that. You know, we got some other people coming out. Have you ever heard of Dave's Killer Bread?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah? So Dave Dahl, he's going to come out and speak at the show too, man. We got a hold of him, and he really buys into what we're doing too, man, because you can't not see what's going on with it, man. You know, it is. It's like life-changing. People can make a decision to do something better with themselves, and a lot of times people don't see it, so they just got to see it for themselves. You know, and there's a lot of people in prison that are doing way too much time that are just not only a drain on the taxpayer dollars by keeping people locked up for just, you know, 100 years, life sentences, 60 years, just for things that, like, a lot of these sentences are just stacked up with enhancements and you can't do anything about it. You know, by the time you get to the appeals level, it's over for you because, you know, for one, you don't have money to hire the good attorneys to be able to get yourself some action. But for two, all the cards are stacked against you, man. And I think that things are really, people are starting to take more of a look at it. But what we're trying to do is give a voice from the inside, man. Be able to hear from these people like, look, all these people are locked away forever. They're never going to get out. But look at all the things that they're able to accomplish from in here. Imagine if they were able to get out, what they could do. You know, and how, like, my thing is, man, I would like to make an influence on the youth that are up and coming because I don't want people to make the same mistakes that I did, man. If I could affect and help the next generation of youth that's coming up to maybe make a different decision for themselves and find out that they can do great things, that they don't have to resort to drugs and a life of crime in order to be able to do something with themselves. Like, I thought that that was really the only way that I was going to make it in life, but come to realize, you know, there's so many legitimate things that you can do, like what you're doing, man. You're doing all kinds of legitimate stuff, and you're doing well at it. And not only do you have the ability to be able to propel yourself way far ahead, but you don't got to worry about going back to prison. You don't got to look over your shoulder and say, hey, you know what I mean? The cops are going to be coming for me at any moment. You know what I mean? So I think it's great, bro.
That, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that as well, man. I used to say this whenever I was locked up. If I could come home and share my story with the ultimate goal of helping one kid that's traveling the path that I traveled, because I was that kid at one time. I was that kid that needed a guy because my dad had no control over my life. I barely really was around my dad. But I was the type of kid that needed a bigger brother or an uncle or a dad to come grab hold of me and say, hey, man, hey, this is where you're headed. Now it's time to tighten up. You got choices here. So I was just reckless and out of control. And I know there's a ton of kids out there. And I said, I still say, if I can help one of these kids that are traveling that path like me prevent them from taking that path, then to me, that's the biggest accomplishment in my life. And so I got on YouTube and started telling my story as a prison channel, right? But so there's this genre, this niche on YouTube that is prison channels. Now, most of the channels that are on there are telling the horror stories and the just wild stuff, and they're the ones that are getting the most traction. But when I started out, I was just telling people, look, doesn't matter what you've been through, You know, it's all up to what your mindset is. You can overcome this. You can bounce back from it. You know, you can turn your life around. Well, for me, that's more of a motivational niche. Me being in the prison niche, my channel hasn't really grown like astronomically like some of the other people. But I am starting to get more traction now. I'm like a little over 18,000 subscribers. I get a few thousand views on my videos now. I've done some collaborations, like with Fresh Out, where one of my videos got 1 million views in a couple of days. But
congratulations.
Ultimately, oh yeah, thank you. Ultimately, my goal is sharing my story with young kids in order to help them see this is what you're going to get. This is where you're headed. I've been that kid. But at the same time, you have a choice, man. You have decisions to make. And, you know, as young kids, young teenagers, young men, I know for myself, a lot of people that I was around, and you probably know as well, you're thinking about today. And you're thinking, this could lead into trouble, but I'll deal with that when it comes. You know, I wasn't really worried about consequences back when I was younger. Whereas now I understand them and I've lived them. And so that is my ultimate goal, man, helping young kids. And there's another thing too. There's a movie being written about my story that the writer guy, and we're arranging to where at the end of the movie, it's going to turn into a go from the movie to showing me speaking at like a high school or a troubled youth center where I'm talking to young kids, you know, as a form of inspiration and encouragement and guidance. That's going to be at the very end of the movie, which really, that's the most exciting part for me. The movie's cool, but that's going to be exciting that I'm actually able
that's
to talk.
That's badass, man.
Yeah, I'm excited about that, man.
I see that our visions align quite a bit with that whole thing of the youth, because that's kind of how I want all this to really, like, formulate into is reaching out to youth, man, that were like you and I, to where you described, you know, me pretty well as well when you said that really you couldn't tell you anything, like you didn't think about the consequences of what you did. And there's a lot of brain science behind that too, that, and they're kind of looking into that as we progress more in the brain science of developing youth, you know, and how they think that, you know, youth are not really able to formulate those type of things, especially if you've gone through different experiences in life that have stunted even your growth or your maturity levels, to be able to, you know, not give them the same consequences as an older adult who knows better, who's already knows what the consequences are going to be and has that opportunity, right? So that's kind of something that we are as well looking into, because it's like, if you're a youth, you need to be able to have the guidance. You need to be able to learn from people who've been right where you're at, because they understand that mindset, you know?
Right.
And anybody else, they're not going to listen to them, but you might hold some more weight. You might have more clout to be able to really open the eyes of the up-and-coming next generation of people that are going to prison, because, like, I've done some studies on this stuff called the school-to-prison pipeline, and it's crazy that basically at a young age, based on stuff that they give them tests for in school, they're already determining who's going to go to prison and who's not going to go to prison. They got to dial down pretty good, too, and they're already, like, putting that money aside to build more prisons to put these kids in.
Wow.
That are going to, you know, grow up and go to prison. So it's really crazy about how that system works and what can be done. And I think that something that can be done is guys like you and I to be able to reach these people in some way that are able to get the point across that really opens them up, wakes them up. Because I know I went through all kinds of shit when I was a kid, man. I went to Tranquility Bay. They're actually like doing, they reopened this hashtag called Breaking the Silence, I believe it's called. And there's a whole bunch of stories. I made documentaries on them, these It was called a behavioral modification program, and it was in Jamaica, and it was messed up, man. They tortured us. They put us through all these crazy-ass things that we had to go through. I was there for over a year when I was 15 to 16, almost 17, man, and that, like, had a profound effect on me. So from that point until when I was 20 and I got locked up on this, I was out of control, you know, and nobody could tell me any different. And so even though I'm not guilty of what I'm convicted of, I did a whole bunch of stuff that led me to the position to get myself into this situation. So that's why I don't blame nobody or try to make excuses for it or feel sorry for myself. I just, you know what I mean? But at the same time, I'm still working on trying to get out, because I don't think that people deserve to spend the rest of their lives in prison, especially for youthful people that were, like, you know, they've done studies that say under the age of 25, you're still not developed and you're still in that youthfulness to where you don't really think about the consequences of your actions, and you don't think about all these different things that you would once you've been through more experience in life. So I would just like to ask you, like, what do you think about life sentences?
Great question. I couldn't wait to speak. I hate it. I despise it. I do not agree with it in 99% of the forms. Now, like, there's this one guy that's just a out of control serial killer who was a serial killer as a young kid. He heinously just murdered people, stabbed these women and even children over and over. And to this day, he's been locked up 20 something years. He just stabbed a guy that I know in prison, and he's attacking people all the time. This guy is a maniac. Now, just normal, like, I've got other friends, they were sentenced as juveniles to life sentences. And in Florida, when they're sentenced to a life sentence, it's forever. There's no more parole. I do not agree with it. I don't like it. And it's funny you mentioned that study about how up until 25, we're still developing. When I turned 26, I noticed an immediate change in my mind. And I was like, what just happened? I just changed the way I'm thinking, literally changed overnight. I noticed the change. Like, we have small incremental changes throughout our lives that sometimes we don't notice. That change in my thinking was so huge and so profound that I was just like, whoa, I literally changed overnight. So it's funny because that happened to me at 26. Like, I had a kid at a young age. I was 15 when my daughter was born. When I turned 26, I just felt like I appreciated it and loved my child and even her mother. I noticed this enormous change that I felt a different type of love for my daughter. Not to say that I didn't love my daughter previously, but it was a different type of love, a different type of connection that I felt for her and her mother. I just learned to appreciate things more. I was thinking more. I was thinking more ahead rather than thinking about just today. And all that happened when I turned 26. And once that began to happen, you know, I still continued to grow as I do today. You know, I don't think we ever stop growing or ever stop changing or ever stop learning. But that was like the magical point of, man, I'm not thinking like I was yesterday. Yeah, and that's when I turned 26, man. So when you ask about a life sentence, do I agree with them? I don't agree with them. I think it's a horrible system. And, you know, if we look at the numbers, right, we have in America, and I want to say that these numbers are still almost accurate, we have 1/25th of the world's entire population. So if you take all the world's population, we're only 1/25th, which is a minuscule amount, a very small amount. Yet if you take the world's prison population and combine them together, we put people in prison. We have 1/5 of the world's population, prison population, in prison in America. That number doesn't make sense. You know, we are imprisoning people by the masses. And then to know that we have a for-profit prison system in this country just means one thing. It's in the people that run these systems, that own these systems, that work in these systems, in their benefit to give people time and give them a lot of time, to give them life sentences, because it keeps so many people making a profit, so many people having a job. And it should not be that way. It shouldn't be a for-profit system anywhere in this country or in the world for that matter.
Right. Yeah, I think those numbers are pretty close, man. The last one that I've seen was, it was even a little bit more than that, that we had a quarter of the world's prison population in a statistic that I saw. But, I mean, even that's like, it's astronomical, man. And we are also the only country, basically, the only civilized country that really even does life sentences. I think all the other ones, they maximum time that you're going to be in prison for is about 20 to 25 years. And they have real low recidivism rates as well, because
they
take programs and teach people things, give them education, and they learn, you know. And when they get out, they don't go back. So,
you know,
just to see the contrast there, and like what you were talking about, the for-profit deal, it's crazy. You know, these phone calls are $250, $3 a call. Everything that you do costs money, you know, and they're just making money hand over fist off of this system, not to mention all the money that they get per person that's in here
from the
government. So I agree with you, man. It's really a screwy system, and I hope that changes are coming to that, because it definitely needs to be something done about it.
Taylor, you mentioned the recidivism, right? And you know how other countries, your max out time is like 20, 25 years. Some of them have a 30-year max out. Nevertheless, that's not a life sentence. I know friends of mine right now that have done 30-plus years. That one of my friends just went up for parole. He's under the old guideline system, because they don't have parole anymore in Florida for the newer people. He just went up. He hasn't had a disciplinary report in over 20 years. He's completed numerous programs. He's got college degrees. He's a shining example of a guy that's staying out of trouble and doing the right thing. They told him, come back in 7 years. We'll see you later. And it's sad, because like in Florida, that old system that they have under parole, there's only so many people left on that, yet they have a parole commission that flies from institution to institution on a helicopter. They get good money. They're paying these people good money to be a parole commission. But if they were to release all these guys that are on that old parole, that means this commission's dead. They're pretty much almost out of a job. And there was something I was wanting to tell you about that was, recidivism also is, like you said, in the other countries, they are offering classes. They're teaching people stuff, right? So here, we're warehousing people. We're putting people into these buildings, into these complexes, compounds, prisons, and not teaching them anything. So in Florida, you can look up all throughout the state a lot of different prisons online, and it's going to say that they have a vocational course, like an AC class, or some type of course where they're teaching people stuff. The problem with that is, prison is a closed system, right? So if you or I were on the streets, or anybody on the streets looked online and it says, yeah, they have a vocational course, that's all you're going to see. You're not going to walk to that prison, knock on the door and say, hey, can I come in and see your vocational? They're not letting anybody in. And because they have that closed system, they can put that up. And now they're getting funding for these courses. In Florida, I can say for sure, they get funding for it. And if you sign up for that vocational course, guess what's going to happen? You're going to sign up. They're going to put you on a call out. You're going to come. There's going to be nothing going on. You're sitting in a classroom talking to guys, doing absolutely nothing. The person that's in that class that's supposed to be teaching it doesn't give a shit if you learn anything or not. And part of that is, they know if you don't educate these guys, if you don't offer them any skills, because a lot of the guys that do come to prison don't have legitimate skills, if you don't offer them anything, guess what? They're going to get out and go back to the same thing, doing around the same places, you know, all the same stuff, which creates recidivism, people coming back to the same exact system. So in my eyes, what it seems like, it's to their benefit, the people that run the system, to not educate people so that they just keep coming back over and over, man. And it's a sad situation, broken system that we have. And that's why it's critical for guys like ourselves to spread this message to these kids that are coming up, to prevent them from ever entering the system. Because once you enter it, you already know, it is extremely difficult to overcome the odds of staying out of prison.
Absolutely, man. I couldn't have said that better myself. And the other thing that I'd like to add to that point is that they do offer courses, like vocational courses like that, but the limited availability of these is like minute. You know, they get a handful of people that get to do them every year, you know, and whether they ship you out and transfer you to another place or, you know, something comes up and happens, and a lot of people don't ever even complete the courses, so they don't get the certification to begin with. And then, you know, it's just the availability for it is so limited that hardly anybody ever gets to see those actual classes as well.
Wow.
As, you know, the what they're teaching in there. That's a different story. So it's crazy,
wow,
man. But, Brian, I really appreciate you coming by today. And it's been a pleasure to talk to you, man. I really look forward to talking more to you in the future. I hope that in the, you know, coming up that you'll be able to come back on and we can visit you again and talk to you and get some updates, maybe see how things are going, bro.
Hey, bro. It's all my pleasure, man. It's a pleasure talking to you. It's a pleasure meeting you. I'm following your story. Anytime, you know, anything you want to talk about, anything you want to chop it up about, any way I can help by sharing my story with you guys, I'm all for it, all game. You know, you set it up, and I'll be here, man. I'm riding with you.
I appreciate that, man. That means really a lot to me. It really does. And we'll definitely stay tuned, and we'll definitely keep up with you. Thank you for joining us. Hey, and if people wanted to find your YouTube page, man, how would they go about doing that?
Real easy, man. You just put in Brian, B-R-Y-A-N, Bruton, B-R-U-T-O-N. You put that in, you're going to see all of my videos on YouTube. It's definitely going to pop up, man. It's a wild, crazy story. Absolutely, man.
Yeah, man. Yeah, go ahead and check out Brian Bruton, man, on his YouTube. He's really, this guy's the truth. Thank you for stopping by, and come back next week. See ya.
Cool.